Blog Talk Radio.
Because we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to Battle Red Radio. My name is Matt Weston, and tonight, shortly, hopefully very soon, hopefully right now, I'll be joined by the biggest, fattest, strongest soul of all, BFD. He said that he'll call in here in a second. So if you're listening live right now, I'm very sorry. He's a bad friend. He's a bad blog man. He's not a man of the people like I am, who's here every time, on time, every time. So if you are listening live, just hold on for a second. Just be a little quiet. There won't be any noise for a second once he calls in. We'll get the show starting. But, yeah, thanks again, and just hold on for one moment. Hey.
Hey, sorry I'm late.
It's all right. Let's hit the song, get this thing going, all right?
Yeah.
Woo!
Because we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one. Yes, we're the Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers. Houston Oilers number one.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to Battle Red Radio. My name is Matt Weston. And tonight, unlike last week and maybe the week before that, I'm joined by the biggest, fattest, strongest one of them all, BFD. Hey, man, how's it going tonight?
It's going great. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good. I think I may be getting sick, and I think it's a complete repercussion for all the crap I've been talking about daylight savings time. I think it's manifested itself in germs or something has gotten to me. But, you know, I'm battle fighting, just taking it one day at a time, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, just got to do it the Kubiak way, right?
Yeah, because this is one of the situations where I got to do better because I can't really do any better. You know, I eat well. I could probably get more sleep, but there's not, like, I guess I can't, like, take more vitamin C in me. I can't exercise any more than I already do. It's all just entirely bad luck, but, you know, I'm going to keep finding my way through it. But BFD, did you know that the Houston Texans are really, really bad?
With the current roster structure, the way it is, yeah, they're a really terrible football team. I mean, we just – I don't know what else you can say. I mean, we just lost a game to what was probably the worst team in football. I mean, I know you can – well, that's not the Browns. But even then, I think I'd rather have the Browns roster than I would the Colts roster, right? And same thing with the 49ers. So they are just a really bad old football team, and we scored 7 points against one of the worst defenses in the league.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Well, we'll talk more about the game a little bit later on. I'd rather talk kind of more about some more bigger picture stuff, and I guess have some more fitting conversation than just sit here and complain and talk about how boring Sunday was and bad the team was on Sunday. So last week when we did the show, I did with Luke, and we did the show, I think, at 4:30. Because, you know, Ireland, I think it was probably like 2 o'clock in the morning there for them, but we were able to do the show. And we were talking about the, you know, the trade deadline coming up, and there's any trades like see May perhaps, and why the trade deadline is boring. And I thought there was no way that Dwayne Brown was going to get a trade. I thought it was just something that you kind of ride and talk about because you want to add some intrigue to something that's usually pretty boring. And then he was traded, and I was really surprised kind of by it. And we, you know, I wrote about it, and I've talked about it before, but not on the show. So I want to hear your thoughts. What did you think about the Dwayne Brown trade?
Well, I think it was, you know, ridiculous. I am not a fan of the trade. You wrote a very fine article explaining why you are not a fan of the trade. It seems to me that, you know, there seems to be this very odd belief from certain corners that a left tackle is not important for your football team, even if your quarterback, especially if your quarterback is Deshaun Watson. The thing, you know, this trade was what it was. This is a political trade, politically motivated trade by Bob McNair that he probably handed down that must happen. I'm guessing they probably likely had a deal with Seattle before the game. We just weren't going to make that trade before the game, and Seattle probably wasn't going to start him so quickly anyway, right? If we traded him a day or two before the game, so at least somebody got to see Dwayne Brown play, and also the Seahawks, like I say, okay, he's rusty, but he's going to be fine, kind of thing. But this is how you take your best offensive lineman and trade him for draft picks a couple years down the line is just not a strategy for success. I just don't see there's really no way to rationalize this from a football standpoint. Yes, clearly Dwayne Brown wanted out of Houston. I guarantee you a lot of players probably want out of Houston and probably don't want to play for Houston. So he is not going to be the first. He is not going to be the last by any means. So what the message was basically sent was, is if you dissent against anything Houston Texans, you will be kicked to the curb. So that's just, I think it's just poor. There was a lot of poor decision making that went behind that.
Yeah. I think it's really just kind of weird too, like how the relationship soured that. Where they were unable to even play at all this year, and you know, I think you're exactly right by saying that it wasn't a football move at all, because it wasn't. Dwayne Brown made a better football team, and this was before the Watson injury. This was whenever they were trying to get a playoff spot, and you know, with the tackles they had, they still had passing offense, but Brown would make the run game better, and also look at all the numbers that PFF has put out this year. They all point to Watson being a lot better with more time to throw than when he's under pressure, which is the same thing for all quarterbacks. And so by default, you're making your passing offense better. You're making it better against tough defenses as well, too. So the trade – and also there's 2 years left on his deal, too. So you could have traded him in the offseason as well and probably got a similar package of picks, too. And I guess they were just mainly worried that he was going to be really bad, his trade value would demarket. But I didn't see that really happening at all. So it was a bad trade. It was really dumb. I can see kind of why – whenever you kind of add the outside football stuff outside of the game, but even then, his impact on the field was greater than that, and really bad, and it was a dumb trade, and it looks even dumber after Watson shred his ACL a few days later, and now it's kind of become disastrous for the Texans.
Yeah, and I had a point to go with that. Well, it's not, number one, we've got another major roster hole to fill. I mean, we've got roster holes now all over the place. We're not going to go solve a lot of these problems out on free agency. You solve most of your problems through the draft. Look at our free agent history alone, which is, the best one we signed is Jonathan Joseph, and after that, it's who? Is it Daniel Manning, Antonio Smith, Wade Smith? I mean, these guys aren't difference makers. These are solid guys. But there's a reason these players are out on the market, and that's because they're probably old because of the way that the NFL works, and they're probably at the end of their line because that's the way the NFL works. So if you look at it just from that perspective, we don't have any draft capital that's meaningful over the next couple of years to go out and replace a Dwayne Brown, and that's a big deal. The other point I really want to strongly make here is that you cannot expect Deshaun Watson to be this 22, 23, I can't remember how old he is, 22, 23-year-old guy who's splitting all over the field like it's nothing. Players age. And we saw it with RG3. We saw it with Andrew Luck. If you get hit a lot, players age really, really quickly. And sometimes they don't come back all that well. So just the mere fact that you're adding risk to this situation when the NFL is all about risk mitigation, it's just a really extremely poor decision. At least I think so, Matt.
Yeah, I think I don't agree with the RG3 comparison for it, but I do think you're adding more risk to a player that shouldn't have to have it with Watson. And I think also too, you look at the tackle market last year and how insane it was with the contracts that you remember Watson got, for example. Russell Okung got an insane contract, and there wasn't like any great free agents out there, but there usually is in the tackle position, and there wasn't a lot of good players that drafted all there too. So, I don't know where they're going to their next tackle. Right now, Julian Davenport isn't strong enough to play that position, and he's beat a lot last week, not because of a footwork issue or quickness issue. He just has the strength on anybody. So I don't know where they're going to fill that position at. And I think that's a, you know, like I guess that's a really great point, though, where even though Watson's playing well like that, why have risk to a player whenever you don't need to, whenever he's your franchise guy there? Why have a harder situation to play him when you don't need to? And especially whenever you already have this player contract to sign that bad of a deal. And if you want to trim next year, you can trim with the possibility of adding somebody else or have somebody else in mind, too. And also, you know, next offseason, you know, it's a little early to talk about, but the Texans are going to have like $55 million in cap space. They will have draft picks. They'll have plenty of money still on free agents. And so that's going to be the idea, is to find some tackle to re-sign there. And usually the tackles available aren't that great. Like we saw last year where Whitworth was the best one, but he signed like an older aging player for a deal too. So it's interesting to see like where they find that, because they probably need two tackles. And so it's going to be interesting where they're going to find those two players at next year.
Right. There's something else I really want to say, and I can't remember, and I'm upset now. But anyway, this goes back to the point. Never mind. I'm done. I'm done ranting. This wasn't a football move. This is a political move, and this is going to send a very strong message to a lot of free agents around the league, and I don't mean that in a remotely positive way.
Yeah, and we can have nothing else as well, too, because, like, every week this season there's been some sort of, like, either a controversy, some sort of strange thing happen with the team internally, whether it's, you know, Tom Savage and Watson starting, or the inmates remark from McNair or Dwayne Brown sitting out, or him getting traded, or Watson's torn ACL. Why Merciless's injury, too. It seems like every single week this year there's been something just really strange that's kind of happened. I think Rick Smith and Bill O'Brien kind of privately arguing to different sources about whose idea Oscar was, who wanted to start Watson sooner than the other. And so every single week this year we've seen this happen. And so this past week it happened with the Watson ACL, which we haven't really even talked about on the podcast because of what happened. And then also with Tom Savage being the worst quarterback in the NFL, and or maybe the second to worst quarterback in the NFL, the Texans signed Matt McGloin. They signed T.J. Yates to back him up. They cut Matt McGloin today, and they signed Josh Jackson. Josh Jackson hasn't thrown a pass since 2011. Bill Barlow pointed out the career passing rating is 55.7. And the big name for every single team without a quarterback that every single team has not signed is Colin Kaepernick. And the Texans, so they talked internally about him. They said that they didn't want to sign somebody who's been so far out of fall, which, again, is a bad argument in this situation. And again, you know, the Texans need a quarterback. And the thing about it with – I'll talk in a second. But the thing about it is that Colin Kaepernick 100% would make the team better. He'd be an automatic upgrade at the quarterback position. He would automatically be able to run this offense that you're currently running that works well with Watson. That may need like maybe 2 weeks or so, or a little bit of time to get through. I think what to Jacoby Brissett, 1 week or 2 weeks in Indy to start over there. So you can start him probably pretty quick. He's undeniably talented, and they're not even going to try to make an attempt to sign him. And so my stance on it is that I understand that everybody has different opinions and ideologies and views. And if you disagree with Kaepernick's protesting, that's fine. I'm not going to get an argument over that. I'm not going to, sit here and say that you're wrong for it. I'm fine with the players arguing because they have a platform and their views that they want to make. And if they have that platform, that influence, they shoot things to do things to try and make things better that they feel are wrong out there in the world. And if you agree with that because you have different views of the flag or the national anthem, that's fine. I completely respect your opinion. But if you take that opinion and then you try slathering football analysis of Kaepernick not being able to run an offense or not being talented or being overrated or not being able to read the field or whatever, that's all just you trying to make up for to cover your own opinion, which is just purely a personal opinion. It's not a football opinion at all whatsoever. And so, yes, the Texans will be there with Kaepernick. They're not going to sign him. Nobody's going to sign him. But just don't try to make the argument that it's a football thing, because it's not. It's like the Dwayne Brown thing, where it's not a football thing. It's because of trying to keep the boat, I guess, I don't know if steady is the right word, but trying not to bring any outside opinion or anything that can make anybody riled up whatsoever, or bring any sort of attention to anything, I guess is the way to put it. And so, yeah, so the Texans season's over. They don't have a quarterback. They're not going to have a quarterback. Yates, Josh Jackson, and Savage is probably the worst quarterback situation in the NFL. And this entire season just kind of is going to be really bad. And at least Kaepernick would have been fun to watch and offer something additional, but it seems like it wasn't even like a question with the entire team. So that's my Kaepernick rant. What do you think about the whole situation?
Well, I think just like the Dwayne Brown situation, this is going to reverb around the league. I mean, every player, and remember, we're talking about a league that's dominated by African-American players, that every player in the league right now is seeing what's going on with the Houston Texans. Colin Kaepernick might actually be happy that nobody wants to sign him, and especially the Texans this week, because if that isn't collusion to not sign a talented player that he's got this lawsuit in court now, I don't know what's going to show it. I mean, how can anybody say, yeah, we're going to go get this guy who was never very good in the first place and who doesn't fit our system very well to sign with us? Yeah, that doesn't look bad at all for McNair, right, in the NFL. So once again, this season, it seems to me, has been all about the field, right? It's been all about emotion. It's been the emotion about why the hell are we starting Tom Savage, which had me so riled in the preseason, right? It's been the emotion about the national anthem protests. It's been the emotion about a black player having the temerity to not show up and to use it as leverage to get a new contract. It's been the feels about Colin Kaepernick. This is my article today about Bill O'Brien. Almost every response is about feelings and hunches rather than actually laying out some sort of argument. So this entire season to me has just been all about the feel. Oh, and of course the big one, the Deshaun Watson loss. So this season's been all about the feel, and this is just another feather in that particular cap that this is about feelings, and instead of like, hey, let's sit down. Colin Kaepernick's the right guy to fit this. Let's go sign him. And we have a chance to make the playoffs because, well, the Colts are trash. The Titans are okay, but at least we still have a chance at the playoffs. But, no, we're making the decision to move forward with Tom Savage at quarterback because feelings.
Yeah, I think it's a good way to put it, too. I really don't want to get into this like conversation, I guess, because it's going to talk about a lot of things that we don't really talk about on the show. And I also don't think it's one of the situations where or I guess like the way, you know, our lives are and the way, I guess, how we are as well. And I guess like, you know, our ethnicity and demographic doesn't really lead to the fact that we should have a big opinion or stance or anything on it in a lot of ways. And that's also just kind of like how I am too as well. But regardless, that's what I have to say. And also, you know, the team's going to be worse off. They'd be better with Kaepernick than what they are going to have without him, with Jackson and this sort of group. So I wish they signed him. It'd been more fun. The team's been worse off without it. And the last thing here is that you wrote about Bill O'Brien today, and you wrote something. It was really good to read something that you wrote, and so that was fun to read it as well. And so I want to talk about a little bit about your article. One, the biggest thing that really surprised me was just all those numbers regarding his opponents that the Texans have record against. Now, I knew those numbers were there because you talked to them, brought them up on the show, but I didn't know that they weren't really that distinct, and they're really kind of spectacular. So I guess, what can you talk a little bit about his record against your AFC South opponents compared to the rest of the teams in the league?
Yeah, that's really the point of the post is that the only teams that we beat are the worst teams. We do not punch up. We do not do well against teams that are better than 500. We only beat the worst of the worst. And Bill O'Brien has been really fortunate since 2014 that the Indianapolis Colts, the Jacksonville Glitter Kitties, and the Tennessee BESF have been three of the worst teams in football. I mean, quite frankly, they're three of the worst organizations in the NFL, right? And so the fact of the matter is, we have won half of our games under Bill O'Brien against the AFC South. We can't beat anybody outside of our division. We're a 340 team or 350 team outside of our division. This is a big deal, I think, because all of a sudden Jacksonville's not trash, Tennessee's not too bad, the Colts are still trash, but Jacksonville is a legit team. We can't play Jacksonville and expect to beat them every game now. So if mm-hmm. you start taking away the only teams we can beat who are in our division, and you start knocking those out that they're actually good, we're not beating other teams. So this, to me, this is a big deal. And I think that what I'm seeing in the responses is again, it's a lot of feels. It's like, but he passes the eyeball test. What eyeball test does he test exactly? Or what eyeball test does he pass exactly? Is that the one where he has incredibly poor clock management, that he's the most conservative play caller in the NFL, that he has a penchant for field goals instead of going for it in fourth down, that he consistently puts his team in positions that they cannot succeed in? He consistently puts his offensive players in positions they cannot succeed in. What part of the eyeball test is he actually passing? And that's what I don't get. So I haven't seen a comment that has made me want to rethink my position at all, because it seems like all the comments have been, you know, something along the lines of, well, who else are we going to hire? So it's not actually answering the question about why do we suck against every other team in the league. It's wanting to find, okay, you don't have a solution, so your question doesn't count. Or your opinion doesn't count. So if somebody could tell me why Bill O'Brien does so poorly outside of the conference and why that's acceptable, I would love to hear that opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, I really think the only argument to keep him is win-loss record. And whenever you point it out, look at the numbers, like it, how much worse off they are against, you know, good teams compared to bad teams, it really shows kind of like how empty and hollow that is. And also, you take account all those women's sessions and wins they had in 2016, and there are about 500 one position wins in 2015. But you take into account that, like, there's really, like, it's a straw man's argument. And so when it comes to O'Brien, like, can you name anything at all that he does well as a head coach?
I'm sorry, say that again.
Can you name anything you think Bill O'Brien does well as a head coach?
Yeah, I do. I'm not completely 100% negative against him. I think he handled the situation with Bob McNair fantastic. I mean, clearly the players like him. That's important, but it's not should mm-hmm. not be the end all, because, you know, players like everybody but Tom Coughlin, right? So let's just be honest here. Players love Gary Kubiak and wanted to play for him. So I think he did a great job with McNair's situation. As far as what I see from a coaching standpoint, I mean, you look at the things a head coach is responsible for, the overall strategy of the game and the timeouts and the clock management and the challenges. I don't see where he excels in any of those areas. Okay, once again, we're talking about a coach that has been blown out multiple times because the team is utterly unprepared. And the only team we blow out are the BESFs. So when I look at him as head coach, I don't even see, like, even with Gary Kubiak, it's like, okay, he's getting it, his game planning's great, he's getting it, he's making changes at half. I don't see that with Bill O'Brien. I just don't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the really one thing I think Bill O'Brien's done well, I think he's gotten the minimum you could get out of this team. And I thought that comes off as really, I guess, not really a good thing. But I think, like, a different coach would come in, they would get the average play out of this team, or, you know, worse than that. And then, like, Bill O'Brien has given us, like, a really high floor, you know, based on the talent level. And so, like, they're going to be 8-8, you know, 9-17 most of the time. And I think he's been able to squeeze wins out of, you know, really bad quarterback play as well, too. And that's not, you know, that's because he has such a great defense and all that. And that's also kind of the bad thing about Bill O'Brien, the reason why I don't, like, I've never really, like, liked him as a head coach, like Kubiak. Maybe part of it with Kubiak, one of the reasons why I liked him so much is because I was a baby, you know, I was, you know, a sweet little boy back then whenever Kubiak was head coach. And so I really liked him. I really fell in love with those teams in, you know, 2010 and 11 and 08 and 09 and all that. And they were a lot of fun to watch. And, you know, they were unlucky. And then they, you know, broke through for a year and a half. And then everything kind of fell apart. But, like, I liked Kubiak. Like, I liked, you know, his offense and his fun watch is very specific, particular. And I just kind of like his personality too, as a guy. And with O'Brien, like, I guess I'm more upset with him just because he did one thing about him is that he did not turn this team around from 13 to 14. That 7-win swing from 2-14 to 9-7 wasn't because he's some great head coach and turned an awful roster around. It was a really talented roster that lost its quarterback and had really bad injury luck and lost a lot of close games. It wasn't because he's some super magnificent head coach is why that happened. And so I think he just wasted like a really talented team for 3 years because he was ambivalent to the quarterback position, or like you wrote, thought he's so good at coaching, he can get anything out of the quarterback position that other coaches can, or doesn't really need it because he's such a good offensive coach or whatever it was. And two, because of that, he wasted like a really talented roster that could have contended for a Super Bowl probably all 3 of those years if they had a quarterback, but they didn't have one because of decisions that, he specifically made. And then that all kind of ravels into the fact that J.J. Watt was one of the top 3 greatest defensive players of all time for those 3 years, and they wasted his prime. He's never going to be as good as he was back then, and they wasted it because of, the quarterback position and, how they scouted and the way they decided to run the team. So I guess it's just kind of like an opportunity cost and all that wasted time, and that it's kind of raveled up with Bill O'Brien that makes me kind of, I don't think the word is like hate him or whatever, but just I feel really whatever towards him. Like, I don't really like him. I don't really dislike him. Like, he can stay or he can go, and it really doesn't matter to me whatsoever.
Yeah, so let me put it my position in this perspective. So today, Roy Halladay, great pitcher for the Blue Jays and Phillies, he passed away in a plane accident today, and I saw a stat come across. And this is what really – this is the sort of thing that makes me double-check my feelings about and my opinion about Bill O'Brien, is when his team's record when he started games, they were 87 games over 500. His team's record when anyone else started was 24 under 500. So Roy Halladay made a significant impact on his team's success whenever he made a start. When you look at the win-loss record of Bill O'Brien, we underperform in almost every major way. In every major way. I don't even have to call it that. In every major way, if it doesn't include Jacksonville. So if you look at the numbers in the post that I did, some of them don't add up to 1,000, and there's a reason for that, and that's underperformance by Bill O'Brien's team. So Bill O'Brien is not adding value as a head coach to the Houston Texans. He's negative value.
Mm-hmm. Do you think he's going to be the head coach after the season?
I don't know. I think that's the question, is if you're Rick Smith. So the reason I feel like this post was self-righteously important, I guess, is that we have another decision point to make in this offseason. Do we either let Bill O'Brien, after his fourth year, hold on to the team with Deshaun Watson coming back and trying to implement if he goes back to his old system, whatever he's going to do with Deshaun Watson, or do we bring in somebody else who has a better offensive system, who's going to go out and hire an offensive coordinator, who's going to hire somebody who's not going to make the special team suck. I don't know how that's going to happen anytime soon, but who's going to make a difference with Deshaun Watson as a professional quarterback. And so you don't want Watson to sit 1 year under Bill O'Brien, who's not playing with an extended contract, because I don't think there is even if you just look at this from a standpoint of, does Bill O'Brien deserve an off-season extension? I think the answer is no. And as kind as I can to Bill O'Brien. So then you're kind of we don't know what's going to happen, limbo. So you're in limbo with Bill O'Brien for the 2018 season. I don't think Bill O'Brien enjoys coaching NFL football. I think he would rather go to the NCAA. That's been a rumor about him for a while now. And so that's where the question comes in. Is does he even want to be an NFL coach? Does he want to go back to the NCAA? I mean, if he goes to somewhere like Notre Dame, he could command a heck of a contract. And I think the NCAA style football better fits his style, especially as a person.
Mhm. Yeah, I'm kind of upset because I thought that this was the last year on his contract this year, because this is his fourth year. And so the Texans can kind of choose, okay, so this is a fourth year, a 5-year contract. So he has 1 year left on his deal before he can leave. So I guess, the Texans really don't like to do that, where they don't want to try to re-sign somebody whenever they like they don't want them to have 0 years on their contract and try to re-sign somebody. They try to whenever they have 1 year left. And so I guess that's what kind of makes this your post that you wrote, and I guess why this conversation you're more interesting than it kind of seems on paper, because you know if Houston's going to extend him, that's usually what they do whenever there's a year left on somebody, somebody's deal, and if they don't extend him, they're usually gone the year after. So, I mean, I think you I wouldn't extend him like you're saying. I would just the next year in I guess kind of limbo because you'll have Deshaun Watson for an entire year, you'll have plenty of cap space to go out and improve the rest of the roster, and then you can kind of see if he can continue creating like a really incredible pass offense like he did, you know, this year by changing his entire game system up to, you know, a college tour offense like you mentioned before. And I guess the only thing that kind of worries me at all about the how good this offense has been, you know, pass-wise this year, is that you've seen a lot of time with rookie quarterbacks or young quarterbacks, or I guess the scheme in general, like, you know, you can even take Tennessee's offense last year, Washington's offense with RG3 that year, where it usually works really great for 1 year, but then if you don't add any more wrinkles and layers to it or change things up, it becomes really stagnant really quickly. And so the big question next season, you know, as far as week 10 as of right now goes, is how many wrinkles and how many dimensions is Bill O'Brien going to add on to the foundation he kind of built with Deshaun Watson this year? And that's kind of the big question, I guess, for next offseason when it comes to Bill O'Brien specifically.
Yeah, because this is a long-term challenge, and you nailed it exactly, is that everybody just did RG3 year two, right? That was the beginning of the end. The beginning of the end was when he was out there playing hurt. I mean, let's just be honest about that. So this is the second beginning of the end as everybody adjusted to this new system. Teams adjust, and so what teams hadn't had a chance to really do yet was adjust to the new scheme. So this is a more complicated scheme than it was when we had Brock Osweiler, when, you know, the only way that you stop the entire game plan is that, you know, just, you know, cover two man, you know, that's it. It's shut down. Every team shut down the Texans after everybody went to a cover two man after the first couple of games of the season in 2016, right? So this is a lot more complicated to shut down, but if you don't adapt and change, teams will catch up. There's too many smart people in the NFL. So that's why this is an important offseason as far as where this team heads. If you stick with O'Brien or if you give him an extension, then are you running out the clock on the J.J. Watts of the world? If O'Brien, who has shown a tendency to not adjust very well unless it was Deshaun Watson, he doesn't adjust again. So that's why I think that this conversation, I bet you, is happening in the front office sooner than later, because it's like, hey, we got this really incredible quarterback. What do we do with him? Who do we want to lead him?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess even going to that too, like you mentioned where the argument was, well, who's going to coach this team? You know, there's always good head coaching candidates, and you don't know who they are really right now, but you know who they are kind of after the season, especially after the postseason too, where once some of those final four teams remain, you kind of know who the big head coaching candidates are going to be and who could be a potential offer. And then in the same thing going back to college football as well too. So I don't know, usually I hate having conversations like this, but whenever it comes to like the state of the team right now and it being the midseason point and this time change, and how dark it is already and how black our hearts are and how there's no Deshaun Watson, you know, these conversations, I guess, are more pertinent to have right now. And I guess they're more interesting to have, too, than talk about this game on Sunday, which I guess we're going to do because that's what we do on the show, is talk about the games that happened. And the Texans played the Colts last week and lost 20-14. 99% of it was terrible. It was so spectacularly awful. And that 1%, that last play, was just so beautiful. How much did you love watching Tom Savage strip sack the Texans losing in that game?
That was the ultimate way to end the game. That was the way that game had to end, right? Was for the left tackle, who was Chris Clark for that play, the left tackle getting pantsed, and then the strip sack of Tom Savage. I'm sorry. I blanked for a moment there on where I was going with that. And it's just perfect. It had to end like that. It just had to. That was just like the Brian Hoyer's floater against the Colts that you wrote about. This is the way the Texans lose football games. They lose football games because they make bad personnel decisions. Exhausting.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was just – Yeah, because that game was terrible, you know. And like you said, like, it's so just beautiful and perfect. And if you forgot, what happened was that the Texans were down by 6. They have 4th and 7 with 2 seconds left. And Chris Clark was his punch, like, it wasn't awful pass protection, but he couldn't get his hands on the chest of him, sit there. So it was like Jabal Sheard's rush to the passer, and it's like he's swimming in his lane just doing a freestyle stroke. And then he eventually, like, gets enough separation. He gets close enough to the edge where then he uses the accompaniment rip move and gets around it. And Savage, whenever he takes his pass, he's down on DeAndre Hopkins. He's not looking where else. Hopkins is double covered, and he's just there holding the ball frozen, watching Hopkins. And then he turns and he's Sheard coming at him. And then he has, like, you know, half a second to run the ball. And he doesn't know what to do. And so he gets hit and kind of, like, reaches back and limply kind of tosses it, strip sack. And the ball bounces probably, like, what, Chris Clark tries to bend over and pick it up. The ball bounces 20 yards their way, and Mingo recovers it. And on that play, like, when you watch this on view, Steven Anderson's really open, and he gets open really quickly. But Savage just is locked on Hopkins the entire time. And, like, Hopkins doesn't get close. He's getting mauled there in double coverage, and there is no look at all for him. Yeah, there's no shot.
No, yeah. This goes back to both, you know, the fact that you can't – all right. I just want to remind everybody once again, as I'm on full rant this evening, which is just, I know, surprising to everybody, that Bill O'Brien – thought that Tom Savage was the better choice to start the first game of the season than Deshaun Watson. So I just want to remind everybody of that little factoid.
Yeah, it's a fireable offense in its own. And then also what also happened in that game too is they had 21 seconds left in one timeout, and they had 50 seconds left. They let the clock roll all the way down to 20 rather than calling a timeout, which kind of really limits the plays that they can run the situation. And that was really stupid too. And every week there's some sort of bad, you know, in-game decision with him, whether it's Arian Foster, you know, ruining his entire career, or something as simple as calling a timeout when you should. It's happened a lot. So I wrote a post called Name That Play, which I copied from you, which is how we got Hoyer's floater 2 years ago, which was just – that play was just so beautiful and spectacular, and I'll never forget that one. And by naming it, it's really stuck in my head too that it will never go away. So I did the same thing for this play. I want to make sure that we never forget it. It stands the test of time. So the options of a pull up there on the site, if you go to Texans Colts in that play, Jabal Sheard strip sacks Tom Savage, we have a pull, and right now the options are the Savagesty, which is Savage plus Travesty, Sheard Savage, the Executive Indecision, the Ghost of Dwayne Brown, Thank God That's Over, and the Tomahawk Chop. So BFD, if you were to name this play, which option would you pick?
Ghost of Dwayne Brown. I think it has to be a straight-up salute to the football IQ idiocy of the Texans last week.
Yeah, that was what I came up with, and it's also a play on the Ghost of Tom Jones as well. And so I thought it just really kind of hit me whenever I was driving to work this morning. So go ahead and vote. Whatever it comes down to, people, that's what we're going to go with. And next time, whenever UT does the BRB dictionary, we'll make sure to add it in there, and it will never, ever be forgotten. So the rest of that game, the rest of 99% of it was just, you know, really wretched. Tom Savage in this game was 19 for 44 for 219 yards. One touchdown was sacked twice. Have you seen a quarterback performance so bad?
Well, I mean, I'd have to go all the way back to the heady days of 2016. Tom Savage is not an NFL quarterback. And once again, How is Bill O'Brien seeing Tom Savage and going, hey, that's my guy? I just don't, once again, I am perplexed by the personnel decisions. Tom Savage is not an NFL quality starting quarterback, and he's borderline backup quality. So this, I mean, after Tom Savage's season this year, depending on how many games he actually lasts because he's such a freaking statue, I just don't see him, like, really having a lot of demand on the open market. I just don't. He looks great in the uniform. He has a big arm, but what else is there about him to like?
Yeah, Tom Savage is a NFL quarterback, like how I'm an NFL quarterback. And the fact that I'm tall and I'm fairly smart and I can bench press, you know, 225 pounds I bet Tom Savage can bench press more than that, but it's all pretty much physical attributes. You know, I've long flowing hair right now too. And that's pretty much it. My name is Matt. There's a lot of quarterbacks named Matt. But other than that, like, you know, he's not an NFL quarterback. You know, I wrote about this summer, and what's been kind of funny about this is, you know, I've seen a lot of people like upset. I've seen, you know, some video breakdowns or whatever of it. And none of this is really new. Like, if you watch, go back and watch the video from the last game and a half he played last year, like, the exact same things are happening. The difference is the results were a little bit better because, again, that defense is really good. And, you know, he has a slow brain. He's in this offense forever, but he still holds on to it. He can't maneuver the pocket. He locks onto one read. He can make some good throws, but his accuracy is really inconsistent. And even though he has such a great arm, he can't throw the ball downfield at all whatsoever. I think he was like 1-for-10 on deep passes in this game. And that's my biggest problem with Savage, is that when you have DeAndre Hopkins and Will Fuller, like, at least give your guys a shot, you know? Like, so many of these downfield passes go 3 yards out of bounds, and the guy doesn't get a chance to even, you know, put his hands on the ball. Or he'll put it, you know, towards the sideline, and Hopkins, you know, lands with both feet, you know, a yard out of bounds. And so, like, you know, give your great receivers a chance to make plays, and he can't even do that whatsoever. And like, 17 for 44 is just so hilariously bad, and it's not going to get any better either. You know, this is how he is. He's just a really bad quarterback. There's nothing good about him. And he has to have a really great offensive line to be able to, you know, even be really bad. And he doesn't have that this year at all whatsoever.
No, we've already wasted too much time on Tom Savage.
The one fun question I have is, can you name any other quarterbacks that Tom Savage is better than?
See, I didn't get to read the script tonight, so I wasn't prepared for this question. And I think that if I start thinking about the worst quarterback in the NFL, you got to start thinking like C.J. Beathard. He's pretty awful, but at least he pushes the ball down the field, right? He was trying to throw bombs all game to Marquise Goodwin. If I'm looking at it, I think he's down there with Brock. I just don't know what else to say. They're both just pretty terrible. And I still think Brock actually has more upside than what he's shown. I think he was put into a crummy system in 2016. I think that, you know, he wasn't that bad under Kubiak. So I think Tom Savage is just really a special kind of suck. Look at it this way. It took him 138 NFL passes to throw his first touchdown. And it took DeAndre Hopkins doing DeAndre Hopkins things to make that happen.
I like how Justin Houston scored a touchdown like his first 27 snaps as a Houston Texan, and it took Tom Savage that many attempts. You know, I think the only quarterback he may be better than is like Matt Castle. I think Matt Castle is probably the worst quarterback. Like, I don't know. I think Savage is the worst quarterback in the NFL. He doesn't do anything well whatsoever. I guess the only thing is he doesn't have the turnovers that Osweiler has. And that's the only thing I guess maybe keeping a little bit better than, but he's by far he's the 84th best quarterback, and he's down there among the worst in the league currently. And he gets to start too.
And let's qualify that. At least Brock Osweiler can keep the ball on the field. Tom Savage cannot.
Yeah. It's like they're the inverse of each other. Osweiler keeps the ball in the field, but he's going to turn the ball over. Savage keeps the ball off the field and bounces in, whatever. But, hey, you can't pick off a pass that's 5 yards out of bounds. It's like that meme of the guy pointing to his forehead, you know?
Right.
So, defensively, the Texans were who they thought they were. As far as, you know, Meek, I wrote a preview last Saturday morning, and it really wasn't a preview. It was just kind of writing about why the Texans are screwed without Watson. And as I was writing, I was like, you know, I feel like I'm being really harsh right now. I hope it's not going to be as bad as it is. But like, this is what my eyes have shown me. This is what the numbers say. And yeah, it really was like overall, you know, this bad. And so on defense, the Texans have a bad pass defense. Jadeveon Clowney is the only one who can rush the passer 1-versus-1 consistently. And their secondary is just, you know, it's awful. Kevin Johnson's been a really bad cornerback this year. Jonathan Justice is the only cornerback that's been, you know, above average, and even he had a bad game last week. And then they play a lot of zone coverage, and they're terrible at communicating, passing guys off. Kareem Jackson, like dead coach, has really opened my eyes to that he's a good defender but a bad cornerback. And So when you add all this up, this passing is going to be bad. But I still think their run defense is going to be probably maybe like the 12th best in the league, 10th best in the league, because you have Clowney, McKinney, and Reeder. You have three really great run stoppers. You can kind of fill in the rest from there. But overall, you have one of the worst offenses in the NFL. You're going to have a defense that can't stop the pass. And so you're going to go down early. You're going to be forced to throw a lot. You won't be able to use your run defense. You won't be able to use your run game. And so this whole rest of the year is just going to be just a complete mess. So I don't know. I'm really not asking questions about the defense. I'm just kind of talking now. Do you think this year can get any better? Like, is there anything worth watching or anything worth talking about whatsoever?
No. This team is so moribund. I mean, okay, I'll take that back. Will Fuller is fun. DeAndre Hopkins is fun. Watching Bernardrick McKinney just engulf souls is a lot of fun. Dude doesn't tackle. He engulfs the opposing player. It's like
a
white blood cell in the bloodstream taking over a virus. It's just outstanding. There's your imagery. So, but otherwise, no. This team's just it's a terrible team to watch. They're boring. They're lame. Offensive system is trash. I'm really disappointed in Vrabel's defense. I really expected Cornell to have more of a say. Just the fact that we're playing guys like Marcus Gilchrist and on a regular basis just tells you how much they did not treat the secondary seriously in the offseason. It's a nightmare. That's part of the reason also for the article today is about Bill O'Brien is that the roster is straight trash with all these injuries, and that shouldn't be so. Okay, granted, we got a lot of injuries, but it's not like we were able to go give talented young guys an opportunity to play to prove themselves. When we head into 2018, we're going to have the worst offensive line in the National Football League. We're going to have the worst secondary in the NFL across position because Jonathan Joseph is aging this year. He is clearly aging. Safety Andre Howell is okay. Kevin Johnson's been terrible, and we still don't have another safety to pair up. Brian Cushing is most likely gone. Our defensive line, depending on what happens with Watt, is going to be problematic. This team has a lot of holes in it, and that's why I really felt like 2017, this was our year, right? When we go into 2018 now with all these problems, I see us once again. It's just the dadgum 8-18.
If we start talking about next year, I still am confident next year. Just because Watson has an extra year on him, and they also have so much cap room. And also, this year has been really like a hellacious year if it wasn't for Watson. Everything else about has gone, completely wrong with injuries and all those sorts of things. And, the talent roster is still there. And really the most interesting thing about me, the secondary position, is just like it's another example of how quickly things change in the NFL, where like the life cycle thing is just so sped up. It's like the NFL teams are insects compared to the elephants that a baseball team can be, for example. And so when you have the secondary for the Texans last year was the strength of that defense, which was the strength of the entire team, was their pass defense, their secondary specifically. And then this year, it's one of the worst parts of this team. And it's just incredible just like how fast that can change. One of my favorite things about this pass defense is like what Luke wrote whenever he wrote about the coverage problems they had against New England. And also I was watching it against Indy too, where this team plays a lot of cover four, which is weird because you have Joseph and Johnson and Jackson. Those are guys who play man coverage. And then you also have so many revolving pieces in the secondary too, that whenever you play zone coverage, you want to make sure you communicate, you play together well, and you pass off defenders, who's covering who. And they're not team really equipped for zone coverage because they have had so many injuries, and they continuously play it. And so Hilton had that deep touchdown pass because Joseph has outside placement, and the safety comes down like he's playing cover one, and Hilton's wide open over the top, and Brissett hits him in stride, and it's an easy touchdown. And so that's been like one of the weirdest things I've seen from Vrabel, is that I understand like all the zone coverage they're playing because they didn't do that all last year, and it's also like a bad team to play it with too. And it kind of reminds me of 2014. They played a ton of zone coverage with Swearinger back there, and Swearinger couldn't cover anybody once he got past him. And Texans have a bunch of deep passing touchdowns in 2014 too. So it's just been kind of, it's been weird, whenever it comes down to that pass defense too. And it's also those things where like, it's really a small microcosm for a really big thing, you know, in the NFL in general too.
Yeah, I that's great. Nothing bad.
So I know last year we watched that Lions game, you know, around October, around, I think it was like Halloween weekend. And I know whenever we watched the game, I don't remember really much of the game at all. I mean, we were first like talk and hung out and caught up and, you know, for 3 hours. And, you know, I had a nice time watching the game, but I don't really remember any of it at all, except for like Clowney had one really cool sack and Matthew Stafford didn't have a game winning touchdown drive. But like the team was that boring. The game was that boring. You know, nothing really happened. And so watching this game on Sunday, after watching, you know, Watson all these other weeks, I really have no idea, you know, how we did that, like how we watched 18 games of Houston playing last year at all. So, like, how did we do that? And, like, how are you going to survive the rest of this Texan season?
That's the worst part. I mean, we have been teased by Deshaun Watson, and it's just, and now we're like, oh, crikey, now we got to go back to this. So it's even I gotta admit, look, I've said for many years, I've watched some of the worst Oilers teams in history play. I've watched the Houston Texans since day one, but there's a little bit of a lie to that because I had kids and I couldn't watch some games, and I was watching games like in the middle of the night and don't remember them. But so I've more or less watched this team from day one with an asterisk, and this is some really terrible football. That's all there is to it. This is terrible football that we're going to be subjected to the rest of the year. If the Indianapolis Colts is your thing, this game was your thing this weekend, then you're excited, but it's not my thing.
Yeah, and also, you go back to the Colts too. This is not when they play like a good team. They like kind of swung it out, and you know, they fought hard and they barely lost at the end. Indy was 32nd DVOA last week. They're now 30th. Their defensive DVOA is 27th, and they scored exactly 7 points against that. So, you know, it's just going to get worse, you know. It's not going to be – well, I guess it could probably get a little bit better, but, I mean, for as far as entertainment-wise, like, it's going to be bad all year, and there's no reason to expect it to be, you know, any good at all, too. And the last thing I want to talk about this game is I was looking at FO's quick reads, which kind of gives you, like, a breakdown, like, all the quarterbacks, the top five running backs, wide receivers, et cetera. Tom Savage had a DYAR, which is total value, a negative 110, which is just spectacular. I don't think I've seen negative 110 in the entire game. And Flacco was negative 51, Oswald negative 54, CJ Beathard negative 102, and Savage was the worst of the week at negative 110.
I just don't know what you say to this. Yeah, because I'm looking at that chart too. I just don't know what else you can possibly say. I mean, Tom Savage has played one and a half quarters of football, and it takes the mighty Matt Cassell to be worse than him on a total basis. That's just pathetic. That's beyond pathetic.
Well, before we talk about this Rams game really quickly, the last question I have you about, I guess, like we've kind of done mid-season review in a weird way, where it hasn't really been about the numbers because the numbers are so dichotomous. It's mainly just been like the way the season's kind of gone, how strange it's been, spring with the Colts game. But my last question, you know, for you, I guess, on the Texans and like this season in general is, you know, would you consider a success at all whatsoever this year so far?
Just let me insert real quickly. Nash asked the question, and I love me some Nash. Let's make sure we answer his question.
Yeah, for sure.
Has it gone the way I expected? There is no way in Hades this season is going. I can't remember any season that has been so. You know, Tim came up with a motto years ago. You know, the roller coaster that is Texans fandom. This game is this season has not even been a roller coaster. It's been like shoot up into space and then go down to the bottom of the ocean, like in 2 days type stuff, right? So no, this has not gone as I expected anyway. I mean, I started the season thinking we're going to go 7-9. Deshaun Watson happened, and I thought for sure we were going to win 11 games, and then Deshaun Watson happened. And we're not going to win a game the rest of the season, I don't think. I mean, maybe against the 49ers, but there's no reason to have even expectation of one. So anyway, what has been the biggest surprise is Deshaun Watson. Who knew? You and I like him from a lot of standpoints, but he's even shown a better arm than he showed in college. So when he's moving forward, he's still not the guy you want to throw deep out. You don't need him to throw deep out to be highly successful in the NFL.
Yeah.
What you consider to success so far? Yes. You know, this team's might be 3-13. It might be 4-12. But just from Deshaun Watson alone, you have to consider it success, because my question for you that I have been so excited and been waiting to ask you for like a week now, is there a single player in the NFL you would take and trade for Deshaun Watson?
Like a one for one trade.
One for one trade.
I mean, I think I would trade him for Rodgers, just because if you have Rodgers, you can win a Super Bowl next year, you know, immediately, and flags fly forever. But I don't think I would trade him for like any of the other young quarterbacks available. Like, I wouldn't trade him for like, if I could pick any quarterback to, I guess, like build around right now, I would take either Watson or Prescott, but I think one for one trading Rodgers would be the only guy I would trade him one for one for. And I guess because the quarterback position has been so weird this year, so it'd have to be probably Rodgers.
But so you would take the older Rodgers, who's coming off the broken collarbone. Yeah, you would. Okay, see, I wouldn't. I would not trade Deshaun Watson for a single player in the NFL. I would not trade him for Dak. I would not trade him for Aaron. I would not trade him for a sack. And now I'm busting runs. Yo.
Yeah. Ooh. Man, I had a really good rap earlier today. I can't remember it now. I'm very upset. It rhymes with turmeric. I can't remember it now.
Nothing rhymes with turmeric.
Oh,
but
yeah,
there's also Carson Wentz. There's also Carson Wentz and Jared Goff. I would still not trade him for either of those guys. That's how much I deeply love Deshaun Watson. There's everything about the dude I am totes adorbs with.
Yeah, and that was my I guess point with that too, where I would consider the season a success 100% completely because the Texans have a franchise quarterback. And when you have a quarterback, everything else when it comes to team building is so much easier to do. It's so easy to fill out the rest of your roster. And especially when you have a quarterback on a rookie contract, I mean, that's you're printing wins for 4 years. And, like, the Texans are in win-now mode again because of Watson, and it's awesome, you know. And so, like, whatever happens the rest of this year, as bad as it's going to be and as negative I've been and as sad I've been and how awful and how nothing tastes good at all anymore is – you know, it's going to be okay because next year will be great. And I'm always like currently in right now, what's happening right now, but like, it's impossible not to think about how fun next year is going to be with everybody healthy. And then with the amount of cap space they have and all that. So yeah, you know, it sucks. And there's such a huge opportunity cost to go from watching Watts every week to watching Savage whatsoever. But you know, next year's going to be awesome. And you know, 2017 was a great season because we know that Houston has a great quarterback for the future, which is something that they have never had, you know.
Yep, totally. So I was a big Matt Schaub fan. I still love me some Matt Schaub.
I love Schaub.
Throw that out there.
One of the things I saw on the site was like a top 10, you know, Texans players all time thing, and where Brown would rank. And there was like 9 responses, and like 7 of them didn't even have Brown in the top 10 or the top 5 at least. I think they have him outside the top 5. And Brown's like, what, the 3rd best player in Texans franchise history? And it's just incredible to me, like, how quickly people turn on players once they aren't on your favorite team anymore, and how fast they can sour on guys. But that's really that. So this weekend, the Texans are playing the Rams at 3:15, and we'll get to your questions after this quick preview as well, too. So do you think the Los Angeles Rams are a Super Bowl contender?
Definitely. They have – true story. The Rams have the greatest net point differential in the NFL. They've got a couple blowouts under their belts, but the defense is very good. The offense is crazy. Jared Goff is playing great ball. This is what happens when you replace a guy like Jeff Fisher who has all the imagination of a dead cricket, and you put in a real scheme. So this is, once again, you know, why I would like somebody else but Bill O'Brien in there, because I kind of equate the two at this point. So, yes, I would absolutely love to – I actually do believe that they are Super Bowl contenders. I don't know if they're favorites. I wouldn't go that far. But when you start looking at the rest of the NFC, the teams that are clearly better than them, Philadelphia, maybe New Orleans, and that's it. So I think these guys are real.
Yeah, I think so too. And it's funny because it's such a weird year where there's so much parity involved here, where like there's no great teams really at all this year, and they all have like, you know, really really, you know, unique flaws as well too. And so I don't, yeah, for sure they are. I think in the NFC you have Seattle, Los Angeles, and New Orleans are the three best teams out there. You have the Vikings, but you have no idea what's going to happen in the quarterback position. But what if, you know, Bridgewater starts, you know, week 12 and he's just, you know, spectacular, and then all of a sudden you have those four teams including the Vikings, and then in the AFC it's, you know, Steelers, Chiefs, and Patriots, and then kind of everybody else from there. So, but yeah, I think you have like eight teams that can all win the Super Bowl this year, and the Rams are on those teams. And I think the perfect point that you made was that this is what happens when you lose a coach like Jeff Fisher. And if you're looking for like a regression and changes in, you know, play, you look for better quarterback play, better head coaching than the regression stats. And the Rams lost a lot of close games last year. They improved significantly at the coaching position. And by improving significantly at the coaching position, they helped out their young quarterback who was in a complete disaster of a situation last year. So, so yeah, like it's really cool. It's happened in Los Angeles. It's cool that Goff, you know, isn't a bust, and that he's made such a big improvement that he's had from 1 year to the other.
Yeah, and true story, Case Keenum is ninth in DYAR.
Which
who
is
would
incredible.
Have ever dunk it?
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. What a world. This has been such a weird year, you know?
Yeah. I just don't even – I can't even. That just doesn't compute.
Yeah, and one of the things the Rams have also done as well to make such a huge leap in performance is that, you know, you would look at the Rams defense and you go, oh, yeah, that's a top 10 defense. And then you go and you look at the numbers and you're like, wait a second, they're 22nd in DVOA. They allowed this many points a game. Their passing defense is that bad. Like, what the hell is wrong with this team? And now they have Wade Phillips as a defensive coordinator. Should every team with a defense that is either underperforming or bad, should they just sign Wade Phillips and make the playoffs next year? Is that the easiest way to do it?
Wait, are you talking about last year or this year?
I'm talking about the Rams were – right now they are third in defensive DVOA right now. Yeah, they're third this year. Last year,
yeah.
You want to take a guess what their rank was last year?
I could take a guess, sure. I'm going to guess that they were 15.
They were 15th. I think you had it in front of you, but good job.
I cheat. No, I don't think that's a surprise either. I mean, this is what Wade Phillips does, is he comes in and he makes defenses better. And I would love to see there's got to be a stat somewhere. It's got to be called the Wade Phillips stat that shows the difference between DVOA when Wade Phillips comes in the first season, because, I mean, the guy's just a magic maker, isn't he? It's just incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, and, I mean, it's also just, like, such a simple scheme, too, where it's like everybody has their own gap, you know, and then you just kind of go from there. And their quarterback has always been talented. They play man coverage well. And you have a J.J. Watt player, and Aaron Donald, and he's been so much fun to watch as well, too, so... Yeah, it's, you know, it's great. I'm happy for Wade because he did it in Buffalo, he did it in Houston, he did the same thing in Denver, and now he's doing the same thing in Los Angeles as well too. And it's also weird every single time there's a head coaching switch, he gets kicked out and then he goes somewhere else and does his actual job. So, you know, it's hard not to hate Wade, even though he's blocked me on Twitter as well as everybody else.
Oh no, that's sadness.
Yeah, that's because I made that joke whenever Charlotte Kaye was begging for a job from him on Twitter, and I was making fun of it, and, you know, Wade didn't like that very much. They went ahead and signed Shiloh Kale next week.
God, well, if it's Shiloh Kale-related sacrifice, then I think I'm okay with it.
Yeah. And hey, I won a Super Bowl, and then he went drunk driving afterwards and was out of the league. So, but hey, you know, flags fly forever, you know. How many sacks are Aaron Donald's going to have in this game?
88.
That's a lot of sacks.
Let's go set a record. Aaron Donald might actually consume two offensive linemen for the Texans in addition to Tom Savage. It's just I've been talking with some friends about this game, and Aaron, we might see the single best performance by defensive lineman in history this weekend.
Yeah, he could easily get. I think five sacks. If he has five sacks, like I wouldn't be impressed, and I'll be like, yeah, that was expected, you know. That's exactly what should happen, you know, in this situation. And so I can imagine Aaron right now and watching tape and seeing how slow Savage is, and watching like Sue Field and Jeff Allen video, and even watching, you know, like Chris Clark and Giacomini on video. Gosh, I bet he's just losing his mind right now.
Oh yeah, no. There's Aaron Donald's his erection is going to definitely last more than 4 hours.
I don't know how many hours in a week, but that's how many hours erection's going to last for. Are you going to watch this game? And give me a reason to watch this game, because I may just watch the condensed version of it. But I do like Hair of the Dog, though. Like, if I watch it, it's only because I like talking to you guys.
No, okay, so here's the deal. Here's why I'm going to watch this game, and it's because of the guy we were just talking about. I'm going to watch this game because, number one, I want to see Aaron Donald get, like, 5-6 sacks. And I want to see Jared Goff pick apart our secondary. These are two great young players. You know, there is a point in time where you say, you know, I'm going to watch J.J. Watt just for this game. This is Aaron Donald this year. So you watch the game to watch two great young players go at it. The Rams' defense is just a lot of fun to watch in general as well. So that's why I'm going to watch. I'm going to watch it in real time. I'm going to enjoy the talent I see on the other side of the ball.
Yeah, that's good enough for me. I shouldn't watch it live. I should only watch the condensed. So I can do the same thing with it, but I do like enjoying the experience of being, you know, miserable with everybody else on the masthead and that sort of thing. And also, I think I'm going to Worst Fest on Saturday, and so I'm gonna be hungover as hell on Sunday. And there's no better way to spend a hangover than watching the Texans just like play awful as you just come in and out of consciousness, you know. So it's going to be such a blast. I can't wait to drink a giant cold brew and watch Aaron Donald play football and just be miserable with all of you guys.
Yeah, that sounds like fun.
Yeah. Ooh, to be in the middle of your 20s, so much fun it is. So, BFT,
yeah.
What's your prediction for this game? Who do you have winning this one?
I don't even have this one as being close. I don't even have this one as being in the park. I'm going to say 52-10. Rams.
You have me slightly beat because I have LARM, which is like the Los Angeles Rams acronym is LARM. I have them winning 44-10.
Golly. I just think about that. Combined, our spread's like 80 points. I mean, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah, it's so beautiful. But yeah, we're gonna watch all eight more of these games, and we're gonna have fun as much as we can doing it. And you know, just watch, if you're listening to this, you know, I really hope you get well. You'll be in my hopes and prayers until summertime next year rolls around. So for our viewer questions, first we have here is from Uproot Texan. He said, "Is Deshaun running to be the Pharaoh of Houston? Because if he is, he has my vote." So be a Is he running to be the Pharaoh of Houston? And if he is, would you vote for him?
Well, okay. So number one, heck yeah. So here's what I think should happen. In my never, ever, ever humble opinion, here's what I think what should happen is we should create a triumvirate of J.J. Watt, Deshaun Watson, and Mattress Mack to run the city of Houston ad infinitum.
Yeah, I don't live in Houston, so whatever you guys are, I've never lived in Houston. Whatever you guys want to do, that's fine with me. I don't really care what y'all do out there. The next one is from UT as well. He said, "If the Texans brass, McNair included, had to choose between Vince Young and Colin Kaepernick, how quickly would they sign Radio to a one-year deal?
I got to be honest. I think that Bob McNair would sooner dig up the corpse of George Blanda and sign him to a contract than he would Colin Kaepernick.
I think he would rather dig up the corpses he has buried in his backyard and say, I did all this than sign Colin Kaepernick, because if he cared about winning football games and all, you know, they would have done it.
Yep.
Yeah. And then the two questions we have here from Nash Meister are, one, what do you do at backup quarterback next season? Do you roll with a veteran or pick up a mid-slate draft pick rookie to develop behind Watson? Or do you both think three, do you prioritize guys who have the athleticism for the RPO, or do you just take the best prospect veteran you can find?
I think you hit it with number two. One thing that I mean, all you have to do is look at the changes that we're, in my opinion, is that you look at the changes that we're having to do offensively in order to pick Tom Savage. So you go from Deshaun Watson, who can do things outside of the pocket, to Tom Savage, who takes 3 days to get to the outside of the pocket. So your play calling becomes completely different. And I think that's one of the biggest disconnects, excuse me, that I see in the league on a regular basis, is that you have one quarterback who's this style, you have one quarterback who's this style. It's like the old joke from the 80s, like, you know, guys drive like this, guys drive like that, right? The rare times when it's okay, you know, Brett Hundley behind Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay is a rarity, I think. Mahomes behind Alex Smith is a rarity. You have to get a backup who at least has a game that's like your starter. So what I would hope is that we'd go out and get the best RPO guy that we can find. I would absolutely adore it if we gave RG3 a chance. Let's see how healthy he is, because he would be a great sub guy for Deshaun Watson. Again, another guy is Colin Kaepernick, but that's not going to happen. But let's go get a guy who has that skill set, and that way we can have that consistency on offense. We have so much success as a team because of Deshaun Watson, so it's hard to replace that. I'm not going to give Bill O'Brien any credit for that success. That was Deshaun Watson's success. But at least have a guy who's come in and kind of run the same scheme that's been having some success. The other point of it is that your offensive line, right, is going to block a certain way. You're changing too many things when you bring in a guy who does not have the same skill set. So I really hope we get an RPO guy. Let's do the right thing on that one, please, for the love of Durga. I don't want to ever see Tom Savage in a Texans uniform again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also, like, you would have to get some of that athleticism, you know, because you don't want to lose your quarterback and have a completely different offense from one week to the other, or even the same game if something happens, because you don't have the similar skill sets. But if I was Houston, I would try to find another athleticism. I don't know who that is really available whenever you think about the quarterbacks that are out there. I would want RG3 just because after watching RG3 last year, he's without the athleticism, I don't think he's smart enough to play quarterback. In fact, where he doesn't know how to use his body. Like week one last year, whenever he went scrambling and ran full speed into that cornerback with his shoulder and got hurt, I was like, I'm done with this guy to play football again, because he doesn't understand like how to slide or how to bounce and how to like actually, you know, normally control his body. And it also is the same what happened to RG3 too, because he ran a 4.44 in the combine, which is the fastest ever quarterback. And it's amazing, you know, like how quickly his entire career fell. I don't want to see RG3, but I want to see some sort of veteran or somebody who's like, you know, in 28 or whatever with some athleticism. And I think for sure Houston should have to quarterback maybe in the third or fourth round, because it's never bad to have, you know, young quarterbacks you can develop at the same time. Who knows what's going to happen to Watson? It's always a backup plan. And also, you can always trade those younger quarterbacks that you draft for other guys. If you do a good job and find somebody who's pretty good, performs even in the preseason, you can flip that for a second round pick or so as well too. But I would want to see like next year happen. They go, you know, Watson, T.J. Yates, and Brandon Weeden again. They should try to find somebody who has athleticism and somebody else with some sort of upside.
And just saying, Matt, part of the problem with next year is that we cannot take a backup quarterback in the third or fourth round because we have a pick until the third or fourth round. So,
I don't think he's a fifth, you know, maybe a fifth round pick. I don't know. Get somebody Missouri Valley State.
Yeah. Once again, this goes back to the problem. This roster is going to have a lot of problems heading into 2018. I am quickly losing faith in this team's ability to make a splash at this point in time, which when you think about J.J. Watt and his career, where it's heading, it's just, man, we wasted a lot of him. Kills me.
Yeah, for sure. I'm still optimistic about next year, but I'm not really optimistic on Watt being like having an all-time great season ever again. And the last question we have here from Nash Meister is, Shane Leckler is 41 years old, is for MVP on Sunday. Assuming he retires, what's the highest draft pick you'd be willing to use on a podcast?
UDFA.
Yeah.
I mean, okay, Brian Anger was great. That's wonderful. Look how badly kickers and punters perform who are drafted. Roberto Aguayo being a recent addition. Yes, you have the Sebastian Janikowskis. But the fact is you can just go get UDFAs. And punters are relatively replaceable. There's no way I would ever draft a punter, like ever.
Yeah, I agree too. I would never draft a kicker. I would never draft a punter. And I think that's exactly, a same situation. As well, whenever you don't have any draft picks, this year too, it's not really a big priority as far as that goes. And I also had that gif I've made of Leckler being really disgruntled walking to the bench was exactly why I like Shane Leckler as a player or as a person, as a player. He's not a good football player. But yeah, that's all we have for tonight. And so now I just want to give you a chance to have a nice little monologue about the Houston Astros winning the World Series. Because, you've waited a long time for this to have happen, and I'm very happy for all of you all in Houston to be able to celebrate a championship, even though, my boy, you Darvish. So, have at it. Go ahead. Here's your platform to soak it up.
I just still cannot believe it happened. As a kid, I grew up watching the Astros and going – I probably went to about – From 1973 to when I went to college in 1988, I went to a minimum of 30 games a year at the Astrodome. I'm kind of relatively speechless, even though I'm clearly babbling about the whole thing. But I saw some of the absolute worst baseball that has ever been played in Major League Baseball history for several years in between. And to see guys like Carlos Correa and Jose Altuve and Justin Verlander. I just such a great group of guys. It's off the charts kind of stuff. I just made history, and it's the first, as a Houston fan with the big four sports, that's the first one since 94 or 95. I'm sorry. So it's been pretty freaking fantastic.
Yeah. Love is beautiful. Again, I'm very happy for you and all of you, and I'm glad it worked out for you guys. Baseball is such a messed up thing, the playoffs especially, and to come out unscathed with your heart full and pumping joyous blood is very rare. So, yeah, that was cool. It was cool.
Yep. Let's take it home.
Yep. That's all we have for tonight. Thank you, everybody, for listening live. Thank you for being on tonight, BFD. We'll be back on next Tuesday, live again at 7 p.m. Central, where we'll talk about this Texans dismantling by the Rams and whatever crazy things that happen next week, because that's what happens every week this year. And the week after that, the Texans are playing on Monday Night Football, and I'm going to Grand Canyon as well, too. So we'll probably do an early afternoon Monday show with them from Ireland to kind of do that. So that's going to be the schedule for the next 2 weeks. If you listen to live, thank you very much for listening live. Thank you for the questions. If you listen to recording, thank you for listening. If you love the show, tell your friends, tell your family. We want to make sure that you can share the experiences you have with somebody else. It makes being alive that much better. And also, if you're out there, just send some positive words on Watson's way. Add some of that positivity that's in the collective subconscious and make some positive Sean Watson in there that can get fed back through. Because this year is going to be awful. So let's all hope that next year isn't awful the way this one was. But anyways, thank you for listening live, everybody. Thanks for listening. My name is Matt Weston. Thank you for listening to All Red Radio.